One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. It is me. It's Remodel Cam. Yeah, that's right. I've been slaving away remodeling a bathroom, and joining me, as always, the Corona Kid, Big Fizzy himself, Kyle Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio with the, what are you calling yourself?
I don't really have a name. I don't have a cool nickname. I'm just Remodel Cam.
Remodel Cam, yeah. How's the remodeling been going? I know you've been demoing both bathrooms in your house.
Yes. Not too bad, actually. Here's the thing that's funny before we get into this stuff real quick. Most of the time you run into something that's a nightmare, right? Whenever you start doing remodel.
Yes.
There's always one thing. Knock on wood, so far on this, my master bathroom, I've not had any problems. Everything that I've ran into couldn't go any smoother. Now I have my son coming by tomorrow to do all the electrical work. He's going to put in some other stuff, and I should have never let him loose in there, but he's like, I'm going to do this and this and this.
I got you.
And he's acting like it's not going to be any big deal, but so far, not had any problems. So if my daughter's bathroom goes as smooth as mine and my wife's master bathroom is gone, this is going to be a breeze. But now that I've actually brought attention to it, it will probably fall apart for me.
Man, isn't that the way normally it works out?
All the time.
You got everything picked out, and then for whatever reason, it just... It doesn't come as well together as well for you. You're like, man, the first one's easy. I'm psyched. And then the next one's just a real drag. I've had that happen with me, like repairing cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like for whatever reason, they might make the rear brakes different than the front brakes. So you'll knock out one set and be like, oh, I'm just moving on. I'm going to go make a sandwich. Your wife would be like, how long is it going to take you? I'll have it knocked out in 45 minutes. Burm, burm, burm. For whatever reason, they change
hours
the bolts
later.
And you have to go and get a special Allen head or Torx wrench, and just throw all kinds of problems. And you're just like, now it's 5 hours later, I'm finally finishing it.
Well, I used to do stuff like this, you know, all the time. Worked a lot of construction, and I enjoy it. This is something that I really, really enjoy doing, but I'm glad I don't have to do it for a living anymore, because I would hate to, like, I like to take my time. And I would hate to be under the gun, you know, to try to get everything done in time.
Yes. My brother enjoys, like,
yeah, I've been having a lot of phone calls with him here lately.
I absolutely hate doing stuff like that. I would much rather pay someone else to do it.
Yeah.
I hate doing stuff like that.
I don't know. It's just one of those deals. I've got a whole bunch of tools and I like to monkey around them, like we've talked about. I love buying tools. So that's one of the reasons I love sticking to
it. Yeah, it's just an excuse to buy tools.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, so I have to jump right into this. And I've been real lucky with getting a lot of crazy stories over the towns or whatnot, the states, that I have already covered, and they just keep adding to it. And so I've got two here.
From which state?
From Kentucky.
Okay, yeah.
And so the first one here, this is from our buddy Lon's got this here. He posted this up that says, unknown green-eyed biped watches a hunter in Grayson County, Kentucky. And it says, this is how it goes here. I was black powder hunting alone on private property in Grayson County, Kentucky. The property had a gated entrance, and I parked my four-wheeler there and normally walked the remaining 150 to 200 yards to my elevated deer stand. As I shut my four-wheeler off and put on my backpack, I heard a very large limb snap and thought it was a deer or animal moving around maybe 20 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think anything about it. Gathered my gun and hunting stuff and started walking down the two-track trail without my flashlight on, due to having good enough light from the moon to see where I was walking. And I've hunted here a long time, so I knew the trail. This trail ended in a 15-acre hayfield surrounded by old-growth timber. As I walked in the dark, I quickly realized something was paralleling my every step just inside the woods. I walked and stopped, and it would do the same. Now, by the time I realized that I might have a problem on my hands, it was too late. And it was too late for me to go back to the four-wheeler, so of course I picked up my pace and I made a beeline for my deer stand. When I got within 10 yards from my stand, I heard another large limb snap really close to the edge of the field on my left. I stopped and turned my flashlight on and shone it in that direction. That's when I saw two green glowing eyes about 10 inches apart.
Green glowing.
Yeah, and 10 inches apart on top of that.
Yeah, right? Something very...
That's humongalo,
large,
right?
Head.
Huge. Instinctively, I raised my rifle and stomped my foot at it and yelled, "Get out of here." Not really sure what I was seeing. It just blinked its eyes once and never moved. I could not make out any details, just that it might have been crouched down due to the proximity of the eyes to the ground. Now, whenever... whatever this was, didn't run like most non-predatory animals would do, I realized in that instant the best thing to do was to bolt up my ladder and get in the stand as quickly as possible. This, whatever this was no more than 8 steps away, and if I shot at it, I would have been blinded by the muzzle flash, and it might attack if I miss in the dark. Now, that's a lot of thinking. You know what I mean? Like, that's really playing this out. Yeah, like, man, this could go south. But I mean, look, the idea of him thinking this through and being like, man, you know, I better not shoot without the flash. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand.
That's a lot of forethought, knowing, like, this guy's fired a gun in the dark before, maybe at a hog, maybe at something else. This is one of those deals like, I can't do it. So it goes on here to say that not having a way to reload quickly, I made an evasive move, and the rest of the time I waited in the stand for daybreak. It circled my stand just out of the light shine.
Oh, that's never good.
Never, never. Now it goes on to say, a few minutes before daybreak, I heard bipedal steps go into the woods where it had followed me from. I waited until daylight and quickly made my way back to my four-wheeler. And as I jumped on the machine, and just before I fired it up, I heard another branch or limb snap loudly in the woods off the trail and behind me. I left the area and went back home and cut the week-long hunt short and didn't return until the following spring. I've never hunted the same way again since and rarely go in before or after dark on foot unless I absolutely have to. And if I do, I always have a sidearm. I've since sold that property and hunt in my home state of Indiana. I can honestly say one thing for sure. If I had had a shotgun or high-powered rifle in my hand with more than one shot, I had felt threatened enough to use it that day. This thing wasn't scared of me at all, and it changed the way I look at the woods and the forest forever. Thinking back on that morning and the days leading up, I now remember that I hadn't seen the normal wildlife signs and visual activity I normally see. DJ.
Man, that's a crazy story.
But you know what's wild is, like, the same thing. You and I have discussed it endlessly, is when people have these experiences, it ruins a lot of guys.
Well, and we get the same thing. We get lots of emails from people like, oh, come on, I would have shot it. You know, it's easy to act like a tough guy till you're alone in the woods and something with glowing green eyes is following you, and it's got 10 inches separation between the eyes, and it's not scared in the least.
Well, and it's also one of those things, too, and I'm glad you brought that up, is, like, it's really easy to say I just fire a shot at it. But, like, this guy established already, if you miss, your night vision's gone. So if you miss it, your ears are ringing, you've just touched one off. If this thing decides to attack, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, especially if maybe, and you could say, well, its night vision's gone, too. Maybe not. You know, maybe not. Maybe you fired at it, it had closed its eyes, moved off, you shot in the direction, here it comes. I mean, there's all these things to take into consideration. It's real easy to say, I just shoot it. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. It's always
I just get up, bro. You don't know me. I just stand up.
Yeah.
Like, how many times you heard that?
Watching every UFC fight in a public place. That's always somebody like, just get up.
Yeah.
I just get up. You're like, that's a world-class wrestler.
You're not just going to get up.
Have you ever wrestled before? Yeah.
It's not easy. And that's the same thing. Is the whole deal. It's like, I would love to, and I've said it multiple times, I would love to think I'm a tough guy and that I would just shoot it. But to be honest, I don't know what I would do. Probably
I would soil my pants and run to the car like a girl and never go hunting.
I would do like exactly like this guy did. I would climb in my stand and hide till daylight. Then I would get down and get out of there.
That's exactly.
And never go back and sell the property.
Right.
Like, that's it. I'm done.
Well, check this out. This is a listener story about a possible Glimmer Man sighting.
Yes.
And this is very recent. This comes from Marcus. Thanks, Marcus, from North Carolina. He says, hey, guys, I had an experience last night, Sunday, May 17th, that I thought you two would love to hear about. Now, a little background on me. I'm 36 years old and a military police veteran of 10 years. I've had some weird things happen to me in my life that I can explain, and others I still can't to this day. I have a healthy skepticism of the paranormal, which is why these experiences bother me so much. I don't worry myself about how people may perceive me when I tell others some of my stories, because after being a cop for 10 years, you know what you see, and the facts are the facts. Like you guys have asked before, if you had a chance to see any kind of creature, which would it be? Well, last night, I'm pretty sure I saw the damn Glimmer Man. Now, any other night, my girlfriend and I wouldn't have went to bed at the same time, but I ended up staying up late due to having to pick up my daughter from work. Funny enough, I was listening to your Above the Law podcast on the way out to pick her up. I got home and I stayed up till around 1 a.m. My girlfriend went to bed maybe an hour earlier. We went through our usual routine, checked the doors and windows to make sure they were locked, and then I laid down. I usually toss and turn throughout the night, fully waking up a few minutes before going back to sleep. I sleep on the end of the bed furthest away from the bedroom door. I have blackout curtains over my window, so my corner of the room is very dark. Our neighbor leaves her porch lights on some nights, and the light pours in through the window. Now, on my girlfriend's side, she prefers to have a little light shine through. On her bedside table, she plugs in her phone so you can see the light periodically shine whenever a notification comes in. As I turned over to face her side of the room, that's when I saw it. Now, this wasn't, let me focus on whatever this is. It was an instant. What the hell is that? Now, I don't care who you are, or what you've done in your life, or how bad you think you are. When you're in a vulnerable state and face to face with something that shouldn't exist, everything goes out the window. Cam, that's what I was just talking about.
Yep, yep.
I've been in convoys, high-risk traffic stops, and patrols in Iraq, but no fear compared to this. It had to be at least 6 or 7 feet tall, maybe, and was wide. I say that because as my girlfriend's phone notification lights illuminated the corner next to the head of the bed, I could see its right-hand shoulder, arm, and a little bit of its side. From what I could see, especially in the shoulder area, it looks like it had some kind of, I know this sounds silly, but small shoulder pads. Nothing big like football pads, but imagine baseball knee pads, but on your shoulder. Something like that. When the light hit it, it did have that predator look to it, with slight glimpses of red, blues, and purples maybe. Just like it was somehow bending the light. I couldn't see the legs, chest, or face area, because I guess the light wasn't strong enough to reach it. What was even more scary is that it was moving while standing next to my girlfriend, like it was touching her in some way. It would seemingly reach over to her nightstand and grab things and then turn back to her, doing all of this really fast. Maybe there was something else there that I couldn't see. Now that I think about it, imagine laying on a gurney and being operated on. That's kind of like what it looked like. It, though, being the doctor. I laid there completely frozen. Jumping up crossed my mind, then I quickly decided not to. If this is real, I don't know the risks. Is this thing capable of reacting? Would I upset it, and something more severe might happen? From what I could see, my girlfriend was sound asleep while all of this was happening. I was still in the same position I was in when I rolled over and saw this thing. My entire body was hot, and I could feel myself starting to sweat. Now, I work out on the regular and have a pistol on my bedside table and a gun safe full of weapons in my closet no more than 10 feet away. And I'm not afraid to say this, as I laid there watching this thing, opening and closing my eyes to make sure I wasn't seeing things that wasn't there, a tear ran down my face, and it was because of pure fear. The whole full sighting lasted about 2 minutes. From there, I closed my eyes and began to say the Lord's Prayer over and over again until I couldn't see it, and I got the courage to roll over. Needless to say, I slept like shit last night. I probably won't mention this to my girlfriend. It wouldn't help the situation any, and I feel like the less she knows, the better. Either this thing is real, or all of us that have seen it or something like it are going insane. Hell, they said that about UFOs, and look what happened. Apparently, they're out there too. Thanks for what you guys do. Keep it up and stay safe. Marcus. Wow. Thanks, Marcus. What a crazy story.
Not for me, man.
The Glimmer Man in his bedroom. Now, that's the very first one of these, Marcus, that I've heard of happening like that. Several sightings in the woods.
It always seems to be in the woods. Now, this one's in the room. So now that changes everything.
Well, yeah. It's something that's able to cloak itself somehow.
But you know what I'm saying is like, but it's not just that. What I'm saying is, how did it get in the house?
Who knows?
You know what I mean? If it's a physical creature, like what we had assumed the Glimmer Man was, something along those lines, it wouldn't be breaking into houses. If it's in the house, it'd be like you breaking into the house. Somebody's going to know.
Maybe it's like Santa Claus. It just comes down the chimney.
Dude, I'm not digging it. I am not digging it. But I have you something else. Just like I was talking to, I've got another one here of something crazy that happened in Kentucky. This comes from someone named MF, and MF sent this to our buddy Lon. And then, of course, Lon hooks me up with all these
crazy
like
NF.
Stuff.
Go ahead.
Okay. It says this, sparsely furred humanoid encountered in eastern Kentucky backyard.
Okay.
This happened on a summer night in 2019. A half human, half animal creature. This is what it says. I thought I'd share my mom's humanoid experience. I'll start this off by sharing that her home and my childhood home is definitely loaded with paranormal activity. My mom's home is situated in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains. She has one neighbor, her mother-in-law. There are no houses elsewhere around hers, just beautiful mountains. And one night, her dog was barking, crying, and growling. She just wouldn't stop. My mom was a tad confused, as there wasn't any outside noises that she herself could hear, and her dog was pacing to the door and windows. After about an hour, she decided to grab her flashlight and go outside to make sure everything was okay, and that there wasn't any animals messing with her trash bins. She figured her dog was picking up the smell of a raccoon or other nocturnal animal, and she scanned her yard and the creek and didn't see anything out of place. No animals, and her trash hadn't been tipped over. And as she turned to go back inside, that's when she saw it. I will give the best description that I can from her explanation to me, as I've never seen it myself, and I hope I never do. It was standing on its hind legs. Its back legs looked animal-like, and its front legs looked more human. All right, now how crazy is that? I guess it's supposed to be like its front looked more, maybe it's its arms? I don't know. Yeah, it says it wasn't hairless, but looked as if it had mange with long fur here and there. The top half looked like a humanoid man, and the lower half looked like an animal. She stood paralyzed with fear, shining her light on it. It looked at her and then started walking on all fours out of her yard and into the mountains. As it did, it stopped and looked back at her, then finally disappeared into the darkness. Her second encounter wasn't as intense. Great, two encounters. But worth mentioning either way. It was weeks later when her dog began acting out again. She tries her best now to not go outside once the sun goes down. She turned her lights off inside and looked out of her kitchen window. With the light from her yard, she was able to see it in her backyard again, although it was further away from her and not as detailed. She said it had the same shape and looked, and apparently it all looks exactly the same, and she said she instantly knew when she saw it that that's what it was. It was the same thing. She said it gave her chills down her spine. She told me that she closed her eyes and let go of the blind so that they closed and stayed there for what felt like several minutes before she would open her eyes and peek through the blinds again. This time it was gone. She said it took everything in her to open those blinds back up to look out. And for weeks following that she would shoot her gun off right at the edge of dark at her back property. And now anytime her dog acts out, she will scan her yard and then step out on the porch with the back door still open just in case and shoot her gun a couple of times. She hasn't encountered it again. This took place in eastern Kentucky and happened in the summer of 2019. Now, I'll talk to my mom later tonight and ask her if there are any other details on its appearance that I've missed. It's been a while since I brought it up to her, as it makes her scared come nightfall, and she'll call and keep me up on the phone later than usual. Thanks, MF, is what it says. So, you start thinking of everybody, when they start thinking about their mom, you're like, man, your elderly mother in the woods, like, you know what I mean, by herself, and seeing something like that.
Right, yeah.
Like, she would be terrified.
I'd
be
terrified.
But what could it be? Like, you're not mistaken. Look, we've all seen, I mean, I have shot some coyotes that had not one hair on them, like no eyelashes. The mange was so bad, there was hair between its toes was about it. The rest of the time, it looked like a leather rat. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, I know bad. What you mean.
So what could you see that looked animal-esque? Because I'm trying to think, the whole time I'm reading this story, I'm thinking to myself, could it have been a hairless raccoon? Like, could it have been a raccoon with the mange and the way it's front with its hands and its upper
right.
body?
That makes sense.
Because she doesn't really go into a lot of detail on its height. Was it 3 foot, 4 foot, 2 foot? You know, you don't really know. But that's also not the way it sounds, because she seems like a woman that would know what she's looking at if she knows what gets into her trash and things like that. So it's one of those things that I have no idea. But it's, again, more crazy crap coming out of Kentucky.
Man, that is crazy. Well, folks, we got a special treat today. We're going to be talking with a friend of the show's, Joshua Cutchin, along with Timothy Renner, and they've collaborated on a new book called Where the Footprints End, and it is very interesting. I always like Joshua's take on his many books that he's appeared on this show for, like A Trojan Feast. What was the other ones? Thieves in the Night and A Brimstone Deceit.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because he always approaches these topics, but in a new and unique way. And if you're unfamiliar, our buddy Joshua lives in Georgia now, I believe, but he's from North Carolina, correct?
Ooh.
And he holds a master's in music literature and a master's in journalism from the University of Georgia. And like I said, he's appeared on here before. But Timothy Renner, we've never had him on, so it was a pleasure to speak with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's an illustrator. He's an author, of course, a folk musician. He lives in Pennsylvania. His illustrations have appeared in various books, magazines, fanzines, and comics, as well as record and CD covers. He's the creator of Strange Familiars podcast, in case some of you are familiar with that. And if you're not, you should check that out. You know, that show's kind of like ours, but different. It covers the paranormal and weird history, and they've been doing that for quite a while. So the two of them have collaborated on this book, like I said, once again, about Bigfoot, A New Approach. That's what I enjoy the most. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that interview. And after the interview, we'll get back and kind of discuss what we talked about. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hey, everybody out there. We got a special treat for you today. We've got two gentlemen on the line with us, and they're going to be talking today with us about their brand new book. Now, one of the gentlemen Joshua Cutchin. He's appeared on the show, I believe, 3 times, Cam.
At least 2. I don't like how you throw the term gentleman around. You don't, I mean, you've hung out with Joshua.
Yeah, that's right. And he's written several books, like A Trojan Feast, A Brimstone Deceit, and what was the other one? Thieves in the Night. I think we've talked about with him before about all 3 of those. But the other fellow joining us today is Timothy Renner from Strange Familiars podcast. Is that correct, Timothy?
That is correct.
So we're very excited to have them on. I got really excited a couple weeks ago when Joshua hit me up and he kind of told me briefly about this new project. And I'm so glad that he wrote this, or they both wrote it. I'm sorry. It's because this is something we've been arguing about back and forth, me and Cam on the show all the time. It's like, I mean, there's not a week that goes by that we don't get like a Bigfoot sighting or story that's emailed to us from one of our listeners. Now, sometimes we read them on the air. Sometimes we don't. But we have a massive collection. And that's the thing is the running joke on our show is, do I believe in Bigfoot? Well, it depends on what day of the week you ask me. Because if you ask me on Monday, I'll be like, absolutely, I 100% believe it. Then come Tuesday, you ask me, I'd be like, man, there's no way. It can't exist. I'm back and forth. And that's one of the things we argue about all the time. Is it a physical thing? Is it something else? Why all the mystery surrounding the sightings, not just like footprints or hair or smells, but strange lights being seen? You know, some people think it's extraterrestrial. Some think it's ethereal. And that's kind of like what this book's about, right?
Yes. So I had just finished Thieves in the Night in summer of 2018. I don't even think Thieves had just come out. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a break. I've got these twins on the way. I'm just going to take a break, and I'm not going to write anything. And Tim in September of 2018 is like, hey, how about we write a book about high strangeness and Bigfoot accounts? I'm like, oh, okay. Just when I think I'm out, they wrote me back in. So I doubled down on the work as hard as I could, and Tim was just working furiously. And I have Timothy Renner to completely blame for the fact that I no longer think that Bigfoot is a relict hominid. Thanks, Tim. You made me even weirder. I appreciate it. But yeah, this book is all about the stuff that people that I would say mainstream cryptozoology doesn't really want to acknowledge. The strangeness that really dovetails with folklore. That's what this first of 2 volumes is primarily focused on, is the intersection between all sorts of folklore that has nothing to do with Bigfoot and modern day Bigfoot encounters. So we not only go into that, but also there's all these sort of anomalies that people notice a lot, strange lights, trackways that end abruptly, you know, where the footprints end, anomalous numbers of toes that you find on some of these footprints, Bigfoot seen in conjunction with UFOs, basically all the stuff that no one who thinks that Bigfoot is a giant ape really wants to talk about. And volume 2 is going to focus a little bit more on some of the evidence that's coming out. But this is volume 1, and as I said, it really focuses on the folklore. So we go into fairies, we go into witches, we go into UFOs, we go into sort of these odd associations that Bigfoot has, we go into the way that a lot of these Bigfoot gifting, sort of the actions of habituators tend to mirror, you know, ritualistic magic phenomena. Women in white, which is something that that Tim pulled out, this association between Bigfoot and women in white that I'd never, ever, ever would have thought of. Ghosts, all these things that shouldn't have anything to do with a big monkey, but you see these similarities cropping up time and time again, that there really is some shared DNA between all these other paranormal things and what we call Bigfoot.
I have to ask this, because not ever getting a chance to really sit down and talk to Tim, I have to ask. Now, I know you've been podcasting. I believe y'all started back in 2017. Am I correct?
Sounds right.
Okay. Was there something that, I guess, has this been rattling around in your psyche before you started podcasting, thinking along this line of Bigfoot and this whole idea of it not really being maybe a relic hominid, it being something else before the podcast? Or was it after you started podcasting and started kind of gathering stories and getting involved in all this that it kind of changed your way of thinking?
I think I started probably the logical place where everybody starts. Like, this must be some sort of natural creature that's out there. And it was actually my own experiences, some of them, which kind of turned my head and started me thinking, wait, something very, very strange is going on here. And then going on a number of Bigfoot investigations. It's more like boots on the ground, Bigfoot investigation stuff that I'm running into this weirdness that's sort of changing my mind and making me think like, well, okay, I cannot ignore this weirdness. There's something very strange going on here. Something beyond, you know, giant monkey.
So what was the experiences that you had, Tim? Come on.
Well, several. One was a ongoing exchange of rock stacking or making a cairn, which ended. Well, it ended in a very weird way. But in the midst of this exchange, one time I was walking up to the area where the cairn was, and I heard a stone clack behind me. I heard a wood knock in front of me, and then I got the bad smell associated with this, as kind of a skunk mixed with dead flesh, and absolute fear overcame me. I'd hiked in this area hundreds of times by myself before. I was completely comfortable in this area and was just overcome with the most intense fear. I wanted to run. I wasn't trying to be brave by staying, but my knees locked. I was just leaning on my walking stick. I could not go. I wanted to run very, very badly, and I heard three metallic clicks, like gears turning, and it all went away. It ended. And on my way back out, I did see some what I call maybe footprints in the snow. There's a light covering of snow there. But in any case, I was actually probably the first time I think I was ever on a podcast with Josh. I was telling this story. And Josh and Soraya, the other podcast host from Where Did the Road Go, they kind of stopped me and said, you know, if that happened inside a house, you wouldn't say it was Bigfoot. Because at this point, I'm thinking, well, this is, you know, total Bigfoot stuff. You know, I almost had a sighting. I know I came close because I had the smell and the fear and the wood knocks and everything else. And then they said, no, if that was somewhere else, you'd call that a poltergeist encounter. All those elements are poltergeist. And that really was kind of the opening of my weird Bigfoot third eye. Kind of, honestly, it was like the Zen smack on the head, where it's like just suddenly I was just like, whoa, oh, you're right. And it was at that moment where I started to look at things a little differently, I think, as far as the Bigfoot phenomenon.
It's funny that you say that. Kyle and I have had that discussion, just like what you were saying, is where you play the game of what if it was someplace different? What if you had something that was, you know, during a UFO sighting? Instead of it, you know, instead of it being like you're talking about dealing with Bigfoot or being with them. So it's funny that everybody, the more you look into it, that's what happened to us, is the more you look into it. And look, I can directly blame Joshua almost 100% for it, is you start linking these in with the smells and the foods, and then you start really diving out like y'all have done. And this one, this book alone, this is going to be, I guess 2020 is the year to just rattle everybody's cages. Because y'all are coming out with this book. Nick just came out with his book. It's like everybody has taken their theories and been like, well, this is stuff we've all talked about off air with one another for quite some time. And now everybody's just like, let's just release it. This is the perfect time and see what happens. And everybody's going to be like, but y'all have done it. I mean, I'm already excited for part two. I'm not going to lie. But this one, you've done it. You really have seen to link a lot of this together, like you were talking about with the lady in white, things that you wouldn't think really connected. And it almost seems like it's just one big pool of water that all of these creatures drink from. Like it all comes from one area. Whatever we're dealing with comes from one area. And in reality, why would that be so hard for people to understand? Why would that be something any crazier than what we're dealing with now in all of this paranormal stuff?
Well, you know, so I find the idea of everything being from the sort of like pan-paranormal source, I find it very attractive. And because I find it very attractive, I'm very deliberately wary of it, because I think that that's sort of the first step on the path to believing in something, you know, that you don't necessarily have evidence for. So as attractive as I like that, I guess what I'm very fond of saying is that like these – I think that if these aren't all the same thing or aren't all different facets of the same thing – we're all definitely looking at something where there's definitely a part where the Venn diagrams overlap in pretty significant ways. What became apparent with this book was that so much of what we call Bigfoot is really just completely culturally dependent. It's dependent upon culture and it's dependent upon setting. You know, there's some stuff as I alluded to before, there's some activity and even some Bigfoot sightings that in a different setting and a different geography would have been called witches, would have been called fairies. In the case of some of these people who just have things that are Bigfoot-ish happening around them but never actually see Bigfoot, things that, like, yeah, we would totally call poltergeist phenomena, you know, thrown rocks that are warm to the touch, odd smells, voices in the forest, raps. These raps, wood knocks are functionally the exact same thing as raps that you'd hear in a seance in the late 19th century.
That was so, nice if you just summon a spirit to do that.
Yeah, right.
At least it's in his house.
Rap three times if you should buy the book.
Yeah.
That's where I've always found myself gravitating towards with a lot of these topics is to me, it's never about whether, you know, Bob McCormick of, you know, West Bend actually saw Bigfoot that night in 1972. It's the fact that he has details in his sighting that you can find in Native American folklore. You can find those same details in the fairy folklore of Ireland. And you can find those same details in, you know, something about these ghostly archetypal women in white apparitions among the Habsburgs and, you know, among the, you know, the Holy Roman Empire. Those are the things. It's the consistency between these different phenomena that I think really argues that there is an objective reality behind them rather than any single one person's credibility. That's always sort of been my personal standpoint. But I'm just, as you said about ruffling feathers, you know, Nick's got a great hypothesis with his new Rendlesham book. It sounds like a really cool idea. And I think I've talked to Timothy about this multiple times. This is the first book that I've written where I can see people actually getting legitimately upset.
You're right. That's going to happen. Well, just be prepared.
There are people who are so invested in this idea that Bigfoot is a relic hominid. And look, I'm not saying that there's not a lot of credible evidence, a lot of things that these Bigfoot sightings describe that are very, very much in line with what we know as primate behavior and primate biology. I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying that the moment that you become so wedded to an idea that you actually take offense over the fact that, you know, that it might not be that, then you probably sort of need to check where your belief intersects with the actual evidence, I think, you know, in anything, really, anything in life.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's what I like about the way you guys are diving into this, because we always joke about it here on the show, is like, there's people that are Bigfoot believers, but they don't believe in extraterrestrials or UFOs, and they point fingers and laugh at the UFO guys, where the UFO guys are the exact same. They believe in UFOs, but Bigfoot, that's ridiculous. And there's like all these little subsects of groups that don't believe. And also, when it comes to research, like you were talking about the different cultures, I think that's a problem, is people will go and look and investigate an ancient culture, but they're looking for stories of Sasquatch. So they're like, it's like confirmation bias, where if you were to talk to those people in that culture, they wouldn't even know what Bigfoot was. That's not what they were depicting. But the researcher, because he wants to find that, because he's a big believer in Bigfoot, all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, there's proof right there. See, this ancient culture, they were experiencing Sasquatch, when that may not be the case. I think, like you're saying, with the poltergeist and stuff like that, I think that's probably more likely what's going on than a physical creature in the woods. But then again, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Maybe it's real. Maybe it's both together.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, we sort of talked about this, and Tim, don't let me dominate the conversation, but I can see that there's going to be some people who read this book and see like how varied our different interpretations are. And they're going to be like, well, what are you trying to say? Because here you're saying it looks a lot like poltergeist phenomena. And here you're saying it looks like fairies and witches and ghosts and women in white and ritual magic. What are you trying to say? And basically, they're almost structured as self-sufficient essays. It's basically just saying, we don't know. And there are a lot of possibilities, because if you try to take it all in aggregate, there's going to be a lot of stuff that contradicts. But each of them is sort of looking at Bigfoot. In some ways, it's not a Bigfoot book. It's looking at these other disciplines, these other traditions, and then putting the Bigfoot filter over it in the way that people have interpreted it in that context. What say you, Tim?
Yeah, nowhere in this book or in volume two will you find us saying Bigfoot is an interdimensional creature, or Bigfoot is a ghost, or Bigfoot is blank. We are just saying Bigfoot is really weird. Whatever Bigfoot is, There's a lot of very, very weird stuff associated with it, and a lot of stuff, as we go in volume one, that conforms with folklore from all over the world.
You know, there's certain books that you read that, you know, you instantly gravitate to. And then there's, in those books, lots of times you will find just little parts that will make a big impact on your way of thinking. And it may not be the entire book. The entire book as a whole may be something that, that you know, you just kind of took haphazardly, but there may be a little part in the book that really, really made you start really thinking. And there was a part of this book, and I love the book, by the way, but there was a part that y'all included that I really appreciate. And I wish that more research was done in this fashion. And what I am talking about is the part you included about the generalities, about Alan Gauld and A.D. Cornwell. And that little part that they broke down this analysis of a ton, I think it was over 500 cases, I believe it was, of these poltergeist infestations. And the things, these common ground that they had found that each one of these, whereas if it was truly a separate individual case by case basis, they may not have as much in common. But I kind of equate it, it's silly, but I equate it to a recipe. If I were to give you the each one of us listening a recipe to make a cake, everybody's going to make it following the recipe, but every cake won't necessarily turn out the same. And it feels like that's what they had found was you could see that, I mean, I think it was over 60% at one point where like there was talking about like things that would disappear, things that would reappear. Well, when you start getting into that, anything over, I would say 50% or better, it's, I mean, it's close to being the exact same thing. When you start breaking 50%, hell, you start breaking 30%. When it's more than 30% on every case has this out of 500, well, then there's a link. You start looking at that and you're like, man, there is definitely something going on. And I like the way y'all have dug into that and put that in the book because it makes me think about all these other cases that we could go back from, I mean, every case in every genre, whether it be sea serpents, whether it be hauntings, anything, and find the connections to these others. And like what Kyle had brought up and what y'all both had brought up is, and like even what Timothy had said, of not saying that Bigfoot is this or that, you're pointing out these facts. You're showing this is what's crazy, y'all, and what's crazy is the connection. It's not what it should be or what we want to label it as. It's the connection is what everyone should be looking at.
Yeah, that Gauld and Cornell study is really impressive because it's, I mean, it's quite enviable. It's one of the largest surveys of poltergeist cases that I think really exist. I don't think anybody's ever even attempted to do the same thing. But you know, speaking to your point specifically about that sort of threshold of frequency, you know, there's a great quote from Goldfinger that's once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, and three times is enemy action. And we've got a lot of enemy action with a lot of these things. So if there was, you know, just one point of commonality between, you know, Bigfoot and the extraterrestrial contact experience, say, just to pick a topic from the book, then that would be, you know, sort of remarkable in and of itself. But you have all these different things. I mean, like, there's something that a lot of people don't realize is that, like, there's a not inconsequential amount of Bigfoot sightings that involve missing time.
Yes.
Which is just, it's not something you hear about. But I think the reason that you don't hear about it is because it's not necessarily associated as a trope of a Bigfoot sighting. You know, Bigfoot is, you see Bigfoot because you're out bow hunting and you smell something funny and this hairy man walks by. But there are plenty of cases where people have actually had missing time, you know, in regards to Bigfoot. And that's something that you see, you know, obviously not only in extraterrestrial stuff, but also in, you know, the fae folk literature as well. So yeah, it gets to a certain point. So honestly, I was much more charitable towards the idea that Bigfoot was a giant monkey until Tim Renner came along and ruined my life. A Trojan Feast, my first book, was kind of sympathetic towards the big hairy ape idea. And then I sort of drifted farther away from that with Brimstone Deceit, and I was kind of getting farther away from that with Thieves. But then this just sort of catapulted me into the next dimension. And I can't unsee it. Yes. So thanks, Tim. Thanks for ruining my career.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
it's a lot more difficult to write about. A big, weird, hairy, I don't know. And as I say this, I was like, I completely 100% consider myself a believer. I believe people when they say they've seen it. I've talked to witnesses who I 1,000% believe them. I mean, mm-hmm. I have no question they saw what they said they saw. So these things are real in as much as they leave footprints and hair and scat behind and can affect people and can even touch people sometimes for better and for worse. But a breeding population of giant ape men, especially where I live, and I get tons of reports. I go on tons of Bigfoot investigations. People, I'm the local guy for this. So I just can't make a breeding population work in Pennsylvania anywhere, but especially where I am in Pennsylvania and South Central. It just can't work.
Yeah. Tim, is there something, yeah. I'm curious, is there something in the book, and I'm going to ask Joshua the same thing, that I guess one part, either one story, that you wanted to make sure, like that was the one you wanted to make sure got put in the book. Like it was the one that if you had one to tell that you were like, this is my Fabergé egg. This is what I bring out at parties to show everyone, like, look, if I'm trying to make my point, this is it.
Well, I think Josh and I both agreed that like the case for this is the one we opened the book with, which is the Fayette County, Pennsylvania case from 73. Mm-hmm. It's got a UFO witnessed by, multiple people, not just the family that witnessed it, but other people in the neighborhood. It's got this UFO apparent landing. It's got two Bigfoot creatures. It's got bad smells and babies crying. It's got the what we call a bulletproof Bigfoot. The guy shoots the Bigfoot and it just doesn't react. At least the first time he shoots it again. It's got the guy then becomes apparently possessed. His own father said he thought his son was possessed by the creatures. He was running around and howling in this inhuman voice. He has a end of the world type vision, so usually associated with a lot of contactee stuff as he's, out of his mind, so-called possessed by these creatures. Later on, after this incident happens, he is visited by what appear to be two men in black like figures. They weren't necessarily men in black. It was a guy dressed in an Air Force uniform and a guy dressed in a suit. He was hypnotized by them. And they asserted that they were with Stan Gordon, the main investigator on that case, and they were not. And so there's a lot of, it has that kind of man in black like strangeness associated with it as well. So if there's one case that kind of, you just want me to name one case and that's the best example for this stuff, I think that's the one.
I would completely agree.
I was just going to say, I'm going to agree, but also for me, it's more of a quote that I found that just left my jaw on the freaking floor. So there is an 1880 book entitled British Goblins, basically looking at, British fairy lore, written by a gentleman named Wirt Sykes. And he has this quote about these anomalous lights that people see in the woods in Great Britain and in, Brittany, which is sort of like the most British part of France that you can sort of look at in terms of culture. And he has this quote that, like, every time I read it, I'm like, I can't believe this just sat in this book and no one actually looked at it. So to quote the book, the Breton San Yanni Tad, St. John and the Father, is a double Ignis Fatuus fairy. Ignis Fatuus, fool's fire, will-o'-the-wisp, anomalous lights, is a double Ignis Fatuus fairy carrying at its finger ends five lights, which spin round like a wheel. The Negroes of the southern seaboard states of America invest this goblin with an exaggeration of the horrible peculiarly their own. They call it Jack-o'-lantern and describe it as a hideous creature 5 feet in height, with goggle eyes and huge mouth, its body covered with long hair, and which goes leaping and bounding through the air like a gigantic grasshopper. This frightful apparition is stronger than any man and swifter than any horse, and compels its victims to follow into the swamp where it leaves them to die. So what this sounds to me like is a late 19th century author looking at the African-American lore of the rural American South and drawing a direct comparison between what is obviously Bigfoot, not only the description of it being man-sized and covered in hair, but also these goggle eyes are something that you see in some accounts. A huge mouth is something you see in some of these accounts. Leaping about like a gigantic grasshopper, we get more into like the leaps and bounds that Bigfoot does in Volume 2 than we do in Volume 1, but that's definitely a hallmark of a lot of these Bigfoot sightings. So you have this 19th century author drawing a direct parallel between anomalous light, fairies, all this stuff, and what is essentially Bigfoot, this jack-o'-lantern that you find in this 19th century African American folklore. And that just, when I read that, my brain just exploded. And I'm like, there's a lot more to dig into here regarding these folkloric traditions and the way that people have framed Bigfoot through the years through different cultural lenses.
Man, that's an impressive quote. I've never heard that.
That it just sat there untouched.
Yeah.
You were like, ah!
I was like, there's something here, which is, it's kind of the exact same experience that I had with Tim and this Women in White thing, which I thought was just balderdash to be really yeah. quite about it. I didn't really give Tim so much grief. I wanted to act like I actually spoke up, but he said it to me and I was like, look at this crazy man over here talking about Women in White and Bigfoot. Right. There's no sincerity there. And I'll be damned if he didn't find it.
He sniffed his drinking glass.
Really compelling stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You're like, I was gonna specifically ask Timothy about that because a lot of the stuff that I looked over, I was vaguely familiar with, but this Women in White and the association with that and Bigfoot, I never knew that. Could you tell us, or at least the listeners, a little bit about the coincidences of Bigfoot and the Women in White?
Well, it's just something I started picking up. I'm like a fiend for Bigfoot witness reports. I just love them. I'll listen to podcasts with Bigfoot witness reports day and night. I love it, and I kind of file them away. I catalog them in my head, and I started noticing there was a Sasquatch Chronicles episode where these two brothers had this, you know, repeated Sasquatch encounters, and then they ran into this strange woman in white who was acting very strange, and after that I noticed some other people commenting like, hey, you know, I saw this weird woman in white and then drove down the road and saw Sasquatch. And I kind of filed these away and I went, I wonder if there's something there. And then I started in my own investigations running into it. And then I said, well, there must be something here. There has to be, there's something here. There's a connection here. And in the same way, Josh was talking about that quote. I mean, without going into the whole woman in white chapter, mm-hmm. which is,
yeah,
you know, it's borne out in folklore across the world. Let me put it that way. There are folkloric wild men, hair covered giant, you know, wild men all over the world in all different cultures, and their female counterpart is either a white creature or a woman in white spirit or a hag who wears white. It's, you just find it in cultures again and again and again, all across Europe, parts of Africa. I don't think I've found any in Asia yet, but America as well. So all over the world, this is happening. Russia, the Russian wild man, the Lishi of the forest, his counterpart is a woman in white. So it's just, you know, the association is there in folklore, but like when Josh said he found that bit of folklore about the jack-o'-lantern, for me, it was Perkta, who is this sort of the Germanic equivalent of Baba Yaga, maybe. Some say she's the moon goddess, but maybe, maybe not. It depends who you ask. She's just this sort of folkloric witch-like figure of the forest. And she's got an affinity for children and you know, calls them from the forest, much like Bigfoot. But beyond that, she has this retinue that follows her around, and they take the form of two things. One is the Heimchen, who are the souls of the children that have died that she's called to, you know, to her, to the mountains or to the woods. And they take the form of will-o'-the-wisp lights. So you have this light entity following her around. And her other, the other group that follows her around are the Perkton, which is a literal group of hair-covered wild men that follow this Perkta, this woman in white, around through the forest.
Yeah, and you might be more familiar with like the sort of archetype of the Perkton as something like Krampus or like satyrs or fauns. That's a lot of the ways that, right, Tim? That's the way they're sort of depicted.
Yeah, especially in modern times. Yeah.
So yes, but the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that from a purely culturally analytical standpoint, just analyzing Western mythology in general, satyrs, fauns, and the wild man are completely inseparable. it's very clear. A lot of academics say we got the medieval wildman archetype directly as a hand-me-down from satyrs and fauns, you know, from these half man, half goat entities. And it seems abundantly clear, and I think this is a point that Tim and I both make at length over the course of 200,000 words in both volumes, that the wildman archetype is a direct antecedent of the way that we perceive Bigfoot. It's there's stuff that you find in all these old wildman descriptions in medieval literature that are directly applicable to people, that things that people describe in Bigfoot sightings. What does that mean? I don't know. You know, I have enough of Greg Bishop in me to think that maybe it's the fact that there is some sort of objective strange other that exists objectively away from human beings, like not part of that intelligence, but an actual separate intelligence that somehow we maybe map our own cultural beliefs onto, sometimes cultural beliefs that we don't even realize that we have. Maybe that's what's going on. All I can say with certainty is that you can see a direct chain of behavior and description from fauns and satyrs to the wildman archetype and to what we describe as Bigfoot, and just wildmen, hairy covered man-like entities worldwide. And that, I think it's abundantly clear after you sort of go through all the literature that we cite in the book.
Yeah, Bigfoot is our shorthand term, modern term for the wild man. He is our wild man. Mm-hmm. He fulfills the role of the wild man, which there's always been wild men living next to us. Every culture in the world, as far as I know, has a wild man living next to him in the woods or in the mountains or, you know, wherever they are in the wilderness, say, next to them. And Bigfoot is our modern wild man.
I don't even want to say, because it sounds silly, of what I instantly thought of when I was reading through some of that was the old stories of Beauty and the Beast. That's the first thing that I thought of, is like our telling of those stories of the lady in white. If you notice, it's always a very beautiful woman in love with some type of creature, some type of strange hairy man.
Kind of like your wife.
A lot like my wife and myself. Yes, I agree, Mr. Filson. But the other thing that I was thinking about too was during that, is, and of course this may be a stretch, but as long as we're throwing this out there, when I was looking through that, I got the feeling of an explanation, if you will, for a lot of the missing children in the woods that they say, much from like the missing 411, is wouldn't they easily go with a lady in white, a woman, an ethereal style woman or looking woman, a child would easily follow her in the fae.
This is folklore that's followed us throughout time. I mean, we have La Llorona in the South, mm-hmm. who is not always but often portrayed as a woman in white, and she is supposed to lure children away. Here in Pennsylvania, we have our own woman in white, called the White Lady of Pond Bank, who was, you know, drowned her own child, supposedly. And, you know, so this is another motif that kind of goes, you know, along on its own as far as these women in white seducing or luring children away or harming them or killing them in some way, as well as their association with wild men. So, you know, it sort of does dovetail with the missing 411 thing. I'm not saying that's what it is, but
yes,
certainly,
yes.
You know.
And I'm getting really animated over here. so if you look at this with any sort of like sort of Jungian sort of background, I mean, obviously you're sort of contrasting the archetypal beauty with the archetypal beast, right? That's exactly sort of what you were getting at. But you know, this is something that sort of, again, sort of illustrating how these chapters, these concepts really tend to blur together because, you know, Tim wrote about women in white, but like that bleeds into the fairy chapter too. And there was an 1857 article that Tim actually brought to my attention first for his Bigfoot West Coast Wildman book that he did about this young boy who was abducted by this basically Bigfoot, a 12 to 15 foot high Bigfoot with these flaming eyes, took him underground to this underground lair has this domed ceiling that is lit indirectly, some sort of peculiar phosphorescent light. He could hear this weird music, and there's this young woman who comes up to him and says, you know, please, you know, try to escape as best you can. And he does. And you take out the Bigfoot and you replace it with a fairy, and that's a fairy story from you know, the British Isles. But you have this, you have this woman, this, you know, sort of virginal woman who's approaching this young boy, And it's interesting because I was flipping through during the research for this book, a book by a well-regarded deceased cryptozoologist who left out all the stuff about the music and the illuminated underground space and the girl who gives him this note that says flee. It was just like about this giant creature that its eyes were, you know, reflecting the light of the moon so that they looked like they were, you know, sort of self-illuminating. And he took the child underground to his underground cave and the child escaped. And they left out all the weirdness.
Mm.
Weird washing.
Weird washing. Yeah. And that's what I think. And again, this is at the end of the day, this is Tim Renner's baby. And I thank Tim for sort of leading the charge on pushing against the weird washing, because the weird washing happens with Bigfoot worse than in any other subject. I am convinced of this after looking into this. Because there's an agenda there. There's an agenda to push the idea that we can actually capture it and catalog it, and we can finally sit at the big boys' table of materialist science. And, you know, ufology has sort of moved beyond that. Ghost hunters have sort of moved beyond that too. But cryptozoology still wants to that sort of validation. And Tim, thank you for bringing me on board for this. The Mutual Admiration Society here. I'm really proud of this, and thank you, Tim, for that.
Oh, well, yeah. Thanks for coming on the journey with me.
That's right. Bringing us all.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, as a native Texan, I would be remiss if I did not at least address a little thing you have in the book of a fellow that passed away in the end of February, the first part of March in 1836 during the 13 Days of Glory here in this great, I really wouldn't say state, more as a republic. You wrote put in the book a letter that was written by Davy Crockett in 1835. And Davy Crockett tells a story of an ape man appearing pretty much from nowhere and warning him of his demise. Where in hell did you find this?
I have to lay the credit for this solely at the feet of Aaron Goyas, who has this great podcast called The Saucer Life. If you want to get very quickly up to speed with all the minutia and all the sort of movements, starting with contactees and continuing through the way that the sort of our understanding of UFOs has evolved over the past century, it's a great podcast. Aaron Goyas is the Saucer Life. But he had an episode called I think it was like the Not Saucer Life or the Saucerless Life, I think it was what it was called. And he mentioned this letter from Davy Crockett. And from what I've been able to tell, and it's not well documented, scholars generally regard this as an actual correspondence from Davy Crockett to his brother-in-law. Scholars also say, oh, it was a tall tale. And of course they would.
Yes.
But so I'm just going to read it in its entirety, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So Crockett, 1835, wrote to his brother-in-law and said, whether it was the axe's disturbance or possibly the heat of the sun which caused an apparition to slowly form in front of my eyes, I know not. As a Christian man, I swear to you, Abe, that what spirit came upon me was the shape and shade of a large ape man, the likes we might expect among the more bellicose and hostile Indian tribes in the territories. The shade formed into a most deformed and ugly countenance, covered in wild hair with small and needling eyes, large broken rows of teeth, and the height of 3 foundlings, I spit upon the ground the bread I was eating. The monster then addressed a warning to me. Abner, it told me to return from Texas, to flee this fort and to abandon this lost cause. When I began to question this, the creature spread upon the wind like the morning steam swirls off a frog pond. I think that in 1835, if you say, as a Christian man, I swear to you in a letter, you probably had a little bit more fear for your mortal soul than you would writing those letters.
Oh, yeah. You could be shot for just calling somebody a liar back then.
And, you know, 6 months later was the Alamo.
Yeah.
So I don't know quite what to make of that, but it definitely sort of corresponds with this belief that Bigfoot can be an ill omen. There are shades of that represented in a host of fairy belief, including stuff like the banshee, you know, these harbingers of death amongst different families. I don't know what to make of it. Like I said, most scholars think that, yes, Davy Crockett did write this, but it was just a tall tale. But, like, of course they'd say that. You know, you don't want to fill the name of Davy Crockett with Bigfoot stories.
The cryptozoologist would say it was the Texas heat that made him sweat, and the sweat got in his eye, and the creature didn't really disappear. It just walked away, and he thought it disappeared because the sweat was in his eye.
There was a Bigfoot, but he was so fatigued that he thought the Bigfoot was talking to him. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Look, it gets real hot down here, and I've been out there in it, and I've never seen anything like that.
Well, you haven't looked in a mirror, Cam.
Not going to lie. That's true. It's very true. I try to avoid those at all cost.
Oh, man. Well, it's an excellent book. We don't want to give it all away. We want people to go out there and get it. Where the Footprints End, High Strangeness and the Bigfoot Phenomenon by Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner. Thanks so much for coming on, guys. Make sure, go ahead and plug yourselves. Tell people where they can find you, where they can find the book.
So you can find me at joshuacutchin.com. I have three other books that you can find. Just Google me. You'll find them. A Trojan Feast, The Brimstone Deceit, and Thieves in the Night. And look up these fine gentlemen's podcasts where they were kind enough to indulge talking to me in the earlier years. I think the plan right now, Tim, is to maybe get out volume two around the end of the year.
That's my hope. I hope to get volume two out, right around maybe Christmas of this year. Let's hope for it. We've had our best laid plans have often been delayed here, but we're going to do our best.
And Tim, tell everybody about your podcast and how to get in touch with you.
Strange Familiars podcast covers all things paranormal and weird and forgotten history and so forth. We have a lot of witness interviews. We do on-site stuff where we actually go out with recorders and go on these investigations and put ourselves in weird places and run into all kinds of strangeness. Those are my favorite episodes to do. But we also do, your standard kind of interview stuff and talk to all manner of people who've experienced all manner of strange stuff. You can find that and me at strangefamiliars.com. All that contact information there goes right to me. You can find my books on Amazon. If you look up Timothy Renner, you will find Where the Footprints End is my new one with Josh. And then I have four others: Beyond the Seventh Gate, Don't Look Behind You, Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, and Bigfoot West Coast Wildness.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on, guys. Had a good time.
Thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Always great to talk to you guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope you enjoyed that little interview we had with Joshua and Timothy. Very interesting. Like I said before the break, I always like the way, not just Joshua but and Timothy together, but I like when people approach a topic from a new angle, if that makes any sense, because there's thousands of books on Sasquatch and Bigfoot, right? And there's these big arguments. Is it a physical thing? Is it imagined? Is it all hoaxes? How can it all be hoaxes? Mm-hmm. How come we've never found the bones? But when you really start getting into it and looking at it from a different point, a different perspective, an expanded perspective, mm-hmm. you start looking at it like, wow, there's a lot of similarities here between fae folk stories of the yes. fae also sound very similar to some of the Sasquatch stories. The smells are associated a lot with other types of folklore and legend. The sounds, the wood knocks, the rock throwing, things like that. Mm-hmm. Tricksters, you know, like puckwudgies and things that live in the woods. Maybe throughout time, this is all the same thing. Maybe it's not, but I like thinking about these things for yes. a topic, you know, and we've always joked about it on the shows, how some people are dead set in their ways and they get mad or almost angry if your idea of what Bigfoot is or isn't, it doesn't go along with them. You know, like we always talk mm-hmm. about, like the UFO people get mad at the Bigfoot people, or the Bigfoot people, you know, or get mad at the ghost hunters and stuff. I myself like to keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
I like to, you know, what do you think when you come to approaching something in a new way, thinking of it from a different angle, not just, oh, I saw this video, so therefore I know everything there is to know.
Yeah, you got to continue to keep your mind open to learn.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, we all and everyone listening has been the same way, as we've all complained because of academia doesn't always do that, you know, and so we complain. So we can't ourselves be stuck or married to one idea and not take every ounce of any sort of evidence or any sort of research for granted. We need to look at everything as a whole. And I like the idea, the way they're approaching it, where they're not dialing it out as far as like dissecting it down, where they're just casting a large net. And they're like, isn't it funny how all this stuff really kind of ties together? And you start going, I love that part. I love that. This is one of those things that it's a book that needs to be read if you're really getting into it. Like I've told them, even in the interview, for the first time, this is something I think people need to read before they start making up their minds or really digging into what you want to research. Kind of look at this as an overview for everything.
Right. I mean, they get into things like not just Bigfoot sightings or footprints, but actual sightings or poltergeists, extraterrestrials. They talk about witches,
mm-hmm.
ghosts. Even new to me was the women in white.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
In association with Sasquatch. So a very interesting read. I suggest you go over and pick that up. I'll put links to it in the show notes, but you can go to Joshua's or Timothy's website. You can also just go to Amazon. That's probably the easiest. It's Where the Footprints End, High Strangeness, and the Bigfoot Phenomenon. So thanks to them for coming on the show. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
More work, baby. I'm going to be just remodeling all week, and I'm going to hopefully get it down and dialed in enough where I can at least take one day off. We're closed. You know, we're off work for Memorial Day.
Memorial Day's coming up, yep.
So I'm hopeful that I can take a little time off on that day, but that remains to be seen. It's how much I can get done.
Yeah, I'm going to be busy all weekend. They're starting to lift the restrictions, and in some states more than others. Apparently, they've lifted almost everything in Oklahoma, so we're actually heading to Oklahoma for a baseball tournament.
Uh-oh.
It's a big one. There's going to be teams from all over. I know we've already seen on the schedule, our first game is Saturday morning. We play a team from Arkansas, and then later that afternoon we play a team from Midland, and then Sunday morning we play a team from Oklahoma, and then I think we're playing a team from Colorado. I'm not sure, but it just seems like it's so long since we've actually played like a real game mm-hmm. that it's going to be a sight to see. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good.
Yes.
But nonetheless, it'll be fun to get outside in the sun and watch a little baseball and just hang out. It's not going to be the whole family. It's only going to be me and Jacob. The rest of the family, Caleb, he's on a fishing trip.
Oh, go figure. That son of a gun.
He leaves tomorrow. They're going down to, I don't remember which state park, but down there by Houston.
I got you.
And then so my wife and Luke, they're just going to be chilling by the pool all
just
weekend.
Just hanging out all weekend.
I guess so.
Won't be bad.
No.
Won't be too bad. She's got rid of everybody. It's just going to be her and Luke.
Yeah, and Jacob seems psyched to be away from his brothers and his mom. He's like, it's really
working out good for everybody.
Like, I don't
except
even care.
Dad.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even care about the baseball. I just want to get away from the house. Because they've been locked down. They haven't been able to go do anything.
Everybody's going to have a good trip except Dad. Dad has to just
it won't be
shoulder
bad.
The burden and go.
I don't think it'll be bad. I think it'll be nice to get out. I'll be honest.
You've already had the COVID, so you're probably good.
Yeah, I'm probably good on that. I'm, you know, the son of the human cockroach. I'll survive.
Right, spawn of the human cockroach.
Right. Well, like Marcus did at the beginning of the show, if you have any interesting stories, whether it's Glimmer Man, whether it's anything you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show, mm-hmm. expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow me, Cam, and the show on all forms of social media. I don't guarantee that I'm going to be posting on all forms of social media. I typically stick to Instagram. I think I deleted Twitter. Not the account. I mean, I still have one, but just a lot of people complaining about everything. I just don't need all that negativity.
I deleted my personal Twitter. I don't have it anymore.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just everybody complaining about everything.
Yeah, I'm done.
I don't need to see that. But if you want to follow it, go for it. Until next time, folks, stay safe out there. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Kim Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.